Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to 100% Hits Volume Pod, the podcast that looks at arguably, I have to say arguably now, the greatest compilation series this country's ever produced. We are of course talking about the 100% Hits compilations. My name is Josh Earle and today we're talking Volume 7, Side B, and I've brought a special guest in today. He's been mentioned on the pod before. Please welcome into your ears. It's Oliver Clark, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I heard that I was mentioned with the Jimmy Nail thing because I do a bit about it, which I love doing because it's so stupid. But also the Jimmy Nail song harked back to childhood. Me and my sister used to laugh whenever it came on.
Yeah.
I just found him funny. I mean, the nose, his face was kind of that rugby player nose. I think he was a rugby player. Either that or soccer.
He was a boxer.
He
went to prison.
No shit.
Yeah. In his young days, he got in a soccer fight.
Right.
And went to prison, came out, said, I'm not going to do that life anymore. I'm going to be an actor. Also was voted, and we've talked about this on the pod, he was voted sexiest man in Britain at 1 year.
You know what? I love that. I love that you don't have to be a cliched looking, you know, pretty person to get sexiest person.
Yeah.
Or man.
Yes.
But what a nose.
Good
I
nose.
I mean, if ever you were going to use the word conk, you would probably use it for that.
Well, Nath Valvo hadn't heard the song before.
Wow.
And he's our age.
Wow. Yeah. Is he?
Well,
roughly.
He's 2 years younger than me.
You'd hear it.
Yes.
I mean, and I'm imagining Nath would have listened to 100% Hits volumes up to whatever,
He said he was a Hit Machine family.
Yeah, I guess it's one or the other. Yeah. It's like when you go overseas, you're either a Family Mart or a Circle K person. You know?
But we're talking Volume 7, so we're talking Side B. So this is...
I didn't realise this was Side B.
Yeah, So we're doing 9 songs, but this is from the year 1993. So what's happening for Oliver Clark in 93?
93, I will be in year 8.
Yes.
I would have been playing soccer, I imagine. I would have been playing guitar. I would have been having... dreams of becoming a stand-up of some description.
Nice.
I was definitely into it because I reckon it was probably... Went on a family trip to America where my dad's side are kind of over there.
Yeah.
She married this guy called Walt. He's very funny. Such an American. He kind of looks a bit like Steve Martin, and Steve Martin's kind of like one of my heroes.
Yeah.
But he had a tape of Steve Martin's.
Oh.
Let's Get Small, the album Let's Get Small. And he goes, have a listen to this. And I listened to that nonstop for the whole trip, just laughing myself to sleep.
They do have stand-up on Spotify, but you don't... The comedy album has kind of gone away.
It's gone away.
Everyone's after the special. We want the special. But there's something about the comedy album. I think Carl Kinane's the last person who just put out an album without the vision.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
You know what's weird? I actually went to listen to a Steve Martin thing on Spotify the other day, and they're down. They're not up there. Only the music bits within those albums where he's playing the banjo. I was like... What's going on? Is he trying to distance himself from... Well, why would you? It's still part of your life.
Yeah, right?
I guess it's a label, Warner Brothers label thing.
Yeah, who knows?
Very strange, but... So are you going to put out an album?
No, I put out enough podcasts.
Yeah.
Now, so you're playing guitar. You're a very good guitar player.
Thank you.
Was your family all musical?
No. Dad, carpentry was... So he was... And he's really creative in that area.
Yep.
Like, he loves designing stuff. Mum was playing the flute... Didn't really pursue it.
Yeah.
But my sister played violin and is still kind of playing it in orchestra. But no, I'm definitely the most musical.
Yeah. Is it older sister, younger sister?
Older sister.
Was she kind of influential in your music taste?
Not at all.
No, my brother, yeah.
She was love it. She was, you know, she loved Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
She loved all those real 90s rock bands so hard.
Yeah.
Which my girlfriend now loves that shit as well. So I'm kind of getting reintroduced to a lot of that stuff. I just kind of really loved all the melodic guitar players out there.
Yeah.
You know, like back in the 80s, I was into Poison.
Yeah.
And I was going, oh, would I want to be Brett Michaels or CC DeVille? Like, I had this thing of, do I want to be the frontman or do I want to be playing the axe?
I've said this before. See, I was into bands like the Lemonheads and stuff like that.
Right.
And if I was into bands like Poison or Metallica, I'd be a much better guitar player.
Right, yeah.
You can get away with just playing Evandato songs by learning four chords.
Right, and this is why I hated those bands.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to the guitar going, this is so easy! But the weird thing is, I then eventually got into blues pretty hard, and I'm going, well, this is, a lot of it is so basic, but that's where the beauty lies.
Yeah.
It's the tension and release in that 12 bars or whatever, but it's the like, you look at BB, and I do a bit about BB just playing one note, but he plays it with such feeling and soul, and he plays it in many different ways, but it's just one note.
Well, speaking of feeling and soul, we've got some real feeling songs on this one.
Oh my God.
Whoever compiled this list, I think, was going through a little bit, because there's some real emotions coming up.
I must say, I was genuinely disappointed by this. I didn't even know it was was side A any better?
Side A's got Would I Lie to You by Charles and Eddie.
Oh, okay.
Peter Gabriel, Screaming Jets.
Oh, wait. So that's side A.
That's side A. This is side B.
Oh, sorry. I obviously got the whole album.
Oh, you got the whole album. Yeah. So we're going to start.
Damn. I was going to say, like, definitely Peter Gabriel was the standout, but that's side A.
That's side
A. And the Would I Lie to You was another thing, which was very Jimmy Nail.
Yeah.
It's got that same kind of feel. So I used to laugh at that one a lot.
So we're starting. We've turned it over. We've turned the tape over.
Great.
And we're starting with a little band called En Vogue and their absolute monster hit, Free Your Mind.
Prejudice. Wrote a song about it? Like to hear it? Here it go.
Here it go. Here it go. Yeah.
It's good.
The gated snare.
Yeah.
Spot on. He ain't no prostitute.
Have to change that to this market.
What did they say?
We're coming up to the hook.
The hook's good, but it does take a few. That's the best bit of it.
Yeah. We'll take that down. We'll play that down.
Right. I wasn't sure how long of the song you were going to play, but that's... I was listening to this and I got disappointed listening to it because that, before getting to the hook, it takes so long and I was going, I think they should have got their one little verse bit earlier.
Well, I think according to the film clip anyway, I don't know if this is what the record is, but they kind of take turns going down a catwalk.
Oh.
And so it's a band. There's the four members.
Uh-huh.
And so three now, but there's four members at this time.
What happened to the fourth?
We don't talk about the fourth. But they go down the catwalk and I think it's a bit of like, all right, my turn, your turn,
great,
the other person's turn. Let's now do the chorus.
Because there were three bits, weren't there, before the hook? Yeah, that makes makes more sense now.
So this was the second and the third single from their critically acclaimed album, Funky Divas.
Mm.
We've talked about them already on the pod before, so we won't go into too much of the history of it. But this song, huge song. This was named the 41st greatest song according to Billboard for girl groups. Of all time. Not just the 90s, all time.
It's very empowering.
Yeah,
it is. So I'm sure for that reason alone it would be up there.
It was inspired by the funkadelic song Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow.
Oh.
It's a good song.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it sound anything like that?
Nothing like it, no.
I don't know how I haven't heard of it.
They've just used the hook.
Yeah.
Or the title, really, for their song. Okay. But the band has done a cover of this. You know the band?
Yeah.
Like... The Weight, played with Bob Dylan.
Love them.
In 94, they did a cover of this, and it is dog shit.
Is it appropriating it to a male point of view?
Yes. Oh, my God. I don't care if you're dressed like a prostitute.
Right.
Free your mind, yeah.
How bizarre. What a...
I always find that so weird. I'm like, I just think, just if you're going to do a cover of the song, just keep the pronouns the way they were. Just be brave enough to go, you know what?
This is what the song is. But you know what I think was going on here? They really wanted to be on Like a Virgin and couldn't get on. And so they said, let's just do it anyway.
So what they're doing now, so on En Vogue, En Vogue,
En Vogue. I would say En Vogue, but who knows?
Look, my
En route.
As listeners know, my pronunciation is terrible. En Vogue recently were unmasked on The Masked Singer America. Oh. They were the Queen Cobras.
I was hoping they were all in one costume.
That'd be great. the Siamese twins.
Yeah. No.
But I find it so funny. So American Masked Singer.
Right.
Have real proper singers on it.
You've got a better market over there, right?
T-Pain, Leanne Rimes, Dionne Warwick, Jewel have all been...
Dionne Warwick.
I know.
Oh my goodness. So good.
Which I... Also, the costume is pretty big. I would feel a bit worried about... Like, she's getting on it.
I agree.
She'd have be 70
what,
at least.
Do you know what her costume was?
I don't know. But
the feather.
Yeah. You would want to put a big old 10-kilo helmet on her.
Because some of them do say it's pretty heavy.
Oh, yeah, and hot as well.
Oh, you imagine that she dies of a heart attack inside the suit. It's just like playing a game of squash for a middle-aged man. It's no good.
See, the other thing with the show, look, and they all say they are singing underneath that. I'm like, why are they, though? Pre-record it and just have them do the dance.
When I saw it for the first time, I thought they were not singing.
Yeah.
But they are auto-tuned to the hilt.
They say, yeah, they say they're singing underneath it.
I think they must be.
I don't know why they do it, though.
It doesn't sound muffled.
No.
And I'm going, how does it not sound muffled?
Yeah.
But anyway, they do sort of protest that they are singing.
But I like that they have, like, America has proper musicians, like Grammy Award winners, and we have Lisa Curry and Toadie.
Oh, God. What a reveal.
All right. So that's En Vogue's Free Your Mind. Good song.
You like it.
I like, and I think it's a great way to kick off side B as well.
Side B, great.
All right. Moving on, this is an Aussie classic band. Although I must admit, I don't think I'd ever heard this song.
Right.
So this is Boom Crash Opera and their song, In the Morning.
Oh, it's a slow build, huh?
It sounds like Australian Crawl.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it? It's such, his voice though is so distinguishable.
Yeah.
Not a fan of this song.
Not a fan of this song?
Be honest.
I quite like the melody. I think it's quite interesting and not what I anticipated Boom Crash Opera to be like, only because I remember Onion Skin being huge.
It was huge. But I guess you've got to have diversity in your album, right? And I'm sure this was part of that same thing.
No.
Really?
This is the follow-up.
Later.
I don't mind this. For an Oz rock band, like from the 80s, early 90s, this
would have been great live, because it's that real tension building to the chorus, and then... I wonder if they have a thing where they have to just hit the crash cymbal because it's in their title. Like, it's just like, all chorus. You just have to hit that crash.
So this was from their third album. The album is called Fabulous Beast. Mm. So the album before was the big monster one. That was the one that had Onion Skin, The Best Thing, Dancing in the Storm.
I don't remember that.
I'll play Dancing in the Storm for you. You'll know it as soon as you hear it. You go, I can't believe Dancing in the Storm was used by the Liberal Party in 2010 and the Boom Crash Opera came out and said, no, you can't do that. You got to ask us.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, okay. Of course.
Yeah.
Crash.
So that's,
that crashes everywhere.
Yeah. So so this was the band went to LA to record this album while they were in LA.
Where did they record it, by the way?
In LA.
But is there a certain studio they did it in?
Is it Jimmy Iovine? Big time producer.
Yeah. Jimmy Iovine.
Iovine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He produced it.
Great.
So Richard Pleasance went over there with the band. He'd already left the band.
Uh-huh.
He had tinnitus. Left the band.
That's not funny, but...
No.
Poor guy.
Too much crash.
You're too much crash. Oh.
But he left the band. In that time he left the band, because of his ears, he wrote a solo album, released it, did well. Nominated for Arias, Richard Pleasant, and then came back to the band, went over to LA with them, started recording, went, you know what, I'm not feeling this. Left the band again. Not long after he left... The Rodney King assault and subsequent riots happen.
Right.
they're in the studio where riots are going all around them. Fuck. They're watching the TV. They write a song on the album, Fabulous Beasts, is a song addressing the riots.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then the album comes out and it is a little bit like, and this is very, very, happened to a lot of the bands from Australia. Big in the 80s, the sound has just overtaken them in terms of like what's popular now.
Yep. Okay.
And so they just kind of, this was not that big, although the band's still going around.
Yeah, I imagine that. Well, there's a circuit now for that era of band, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, isn't that a shame when the sound does get overtaken by something new and they're still either they've taken too long to get the next one out.
Yep.
Is that what happened? I guess they did.
Yeah, right? It was like 3 years.
It doesn't say much.
No.
But especially if you're touring the past album and for 2 years, then you get in the studio, do that for another year, that's 3 years, and you're kind of like, oh, we're done.
Yeah, when you got one of the main songwriters leaves to go do a solo album and then comes back.
And then goes again.
Yeah.
Oh, what a flaky fuck. I'm not kidding.
Richard Pleasance.
Well, I blame the band on that one. Should have known what you're getting. Anything but pleasant.
So that's Boom Crash Opera.
Okay. Yeah, all right,
we're going to move on. Now, this is probably the biggest hit from this album. This is Lenny Kravitz and Are You Gonna Go My Way?
Wonderful. Yeah. I do love this. But whenever I hear it, because I love Tom Jones. I think Tom Jones was, and Robbie Williams did a duet on Reload.
I like the
All right, Robbie, are you ready?
The Tom Jones version of I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor by the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
Which he only played live at, like, one of those Live 8 kind of shows.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, nah. And they had plans to release that as a single.
Oh, my God. I love that stuff. Because I know Tom Jones did the EMF song Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I saw a video of him doing it with them. And they were doing their thing. And then when he sung, like, EMF were almost kind of laughing. I think they were amused that he was there, but also couldn't believe that he was there singing their song. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
No. But this
is a great song.
This works. Alright.
What a riff.
It's so good.
What a riff. I just think of that flying V.
Yes.
You know.
Well, I always think of, when I hear this song, the film clip. I remember the film clip being huge,
right,
and the female drummer with the huge afro was the coolest thing for me in 93. Yeah.
I think I get this and American Woman video clip mixed up in my head. So the Flying V may not have even been in this clip.
Yeah. So we've talked, Lenny's been on before. We talked about It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
Oh, he's been on this show.
He's been on the show. Yeah, I get all the big guests. But in 80, that was his first kind of kind of thing in 91, where he wasn't a star yet. It was his first album.
Was that late? I thought he was like late 80s.
He was producing and writing songs for people,
right?
But still wasn't like saying, I'm going to be the front man.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous looking at him going, how did you not think you were going to be a front man?
Like, I know. What a look.
You're one of the most beautiful men in the world.
Man, it's insane. I remember going to see him at the Music Bowl. And he had, his amp stack was in this triangle, like a bespoke triangle thing. I was like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I love that. Such a showman.
But 93 was his year.
Right.
So we'll talk about Boom Crash Opera trying to find their place. Lenny Kravitz knew exactly where he was in 93. He was just, so this is what he was doing in 93. So in 93, he wrote Line Up for Aerosmith, appeared on Mick Jagger's solo album, did a cover with Bill Withers.
Oh.
Played guitar on David Bowie's The Buddha of Suburbia.
Wow.
He also released a song with Al Green and Curtis Mayfield.
God damn.
This was released. It was number 12 on the Billboard charts. Got a Brit Award. And this is... Look. He'd broken up with Lisa Bonet.
Right.
And the rumour was he'd broken up with Lisa Bonet because when he worked on Madonna's album, he produced her, they had an affair. He denies it.
Right.
But that's the thing. That was in 91, but the divorce finally went through in 93. And you can look up who he's dated. He's done well for himself.
Done it all.
Yeah. And a lot of Australians in the mix.
Ah.
So
Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman, yes.
Really?
Yep. Do you want to have a guess? Two others.
They're
in the music world.
Oh, okay. Maybe Kylie Minogue had a stint. Yeah.
Kylie Minogue, yep.
And one more?
One more. Aussie pop star back in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go Sophie Monk.
Oh, no, Natalie Imbruglia.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. I think I vaguely remember that, actually.
Yeah, so they were together. She was with David Schwimmer and then Lenny Kravitz.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then Jason Momoa went with Lisa Bonet, is
yes.
that right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, they're no longer.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I just...
I heard that. I didn't even know they're together. And then I heard they were broken up. And I was like, ha!
But this song, absolute, yeah, it's great.
It's a cracker and, yeah... Weirdly enough, I remember listening to that album, and they weren't all hits, though.
No.
You know, there was probably about three that I really liked.
Yeah.
I'm a hard man to please sometimes, but I just don't like slow songs.
Well, it was back in the day where you could do that because people had to buy the album. Yeah. And this is why the record industry kind of went under, because it went from, like, Bowie would release eight songs, and that's an album. There you go, that's an album. And the eight songs were good songs.
Yeah.
And then people extending it out to 15 songs, 16 tracks, and it's like... Half of these could not be on the album. You didn't need to fill up the entire CD.
Well, I think also it was probably not rebelling so much against, but just having the ability to put that many songs on. Whereas vinyl, you have real limited space. Tape, you have limited space. Yeah. CD, you can kind of get away with and have a double CD.
Yeah. Didn't need it.
Didn't All need right. it.
So here's a song, which when I saw the lineup of what songs are on this album, I thought, I don't even know who this is. I've never heard this song before.
Hmm.
And within seconds, I went... Oh no, I know this song, and this song was absolutely huge. It's Tasman Archer, Sleeping Satellite. Speaking of slow songs, I'm sorry, OC.
This has almost got a Seal type.
I blame you for the moonlit sky and the dream that died with the eagle's
Tasman Archer, Sleeping Satellite.
Tasman Archer.
I blame you for the moonlit nights when I Her wonder. Night.
See, I can't take this seriously. All songs are cheesy to me. I can't hear lyrics and not go, that is ridiculous.
I think more pop songs should be written about the Apollo space missions.
Wow. Good tone in the voice, though, there. Like that. How many takes do you reckon that took to get that little screech in the voice?
Yeah. If they were trying for it, if it was just a happy accident. All right.
You reckon Lenny would have used that as an excuse when he was, like, cheating? Don't blame me, baby. Blame it on the sleeping satellite.
So this is Tasman's debut single.
Great.
And I remember the song being huge, although I remember it being bigger than it was, because I looked at and it got to, I think, number 14 in Australia. It got to number one in the UK, though.
Right.
The song it knocked off the top of the charts was The Shaman's Ebenezer Good. Remember that?
Oh.
He's a good.
Yeah.
Is Ebenezer good? Yeah.
I like that. It was a fun song.
And then it was number one for 2 weeks, and then The Juggernaut that was... Boys to Men, End of the Road came along.
Oh, my God.
And that was the biggest selling single of the year.
That stayed at number one for a long,
long
time.
Yeah, a long, long time.
I remember someone saying the production on that was like the amount of vocal tracks in the mix was something up at like 45 or 50.
Yeah.
Or something, you know, and you're just like, I know there's four of them, but then there's, oh, that's insane.
Do you know Boys to Men, I don't know if they're going to come on the podcast in terms of if we talk about them.
Right.
But they're now, they're doing the Vegas kind of residency.
Perfect. You know, I love that.
Yeah. And there's the documentary series, which I've talked about a lot on this show, This Is Pop, and they're on that.
Right.
And it's interesting because they talk about how they were the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
And then they weren't. Yeah. And they had to kind of redefine who they were. And now they're doing these kind of residencies in Vegas, but all their fans are like the fans who grew up with them,
right?
And so they like, they know them personally, they come along and they're like, I remember you from this show, and it's just all that kind of stuff.
You'd have to almost think, because I think of like Human Nature having their stint in Vegas for years and going, man, if they're surviving that long, Boys to Men must be huge, you know, like they could stay there for years.
Yep.
They'd have two venues named after them.
Because I was thinking, like, if you're a touring musician and going, oh, the touring life is hard.
Uh-huh.
How about we stay somewhere where everyone is kind of floating in and floating out of, and our audience is just migrating all the time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. I was listening to, I found just on Spotify, an Elvis 69 at the International. That's when he first started in Vegas.
Yeah.
And he sounded so fresh. He was on stage. He was just so fun and just these massive monologues, just joking.
Yeah.
Kind of dirty or you know, like sleeping with women, blah, blah, blah. But then it's funny, you just, he was obviously there for quite a few years, and just you see him getting a bit stale and a bit sour. Still good, but just like kind of, he's just not having as much fun.
You know? Which is part of the job of being a performer, going, hey, you got to pretend that this is the best night of your life, because for some people out there, it is the best night of their life.
That's exactly right. But if you're doing two shows a day, you know, that's incredible. Yeah. What a life. And then what do you do on your downtime? If you're big, you probably can't really get out of your room.
No, in Vegas, no.
Yeah. I think Celine Dion and that used to just literally fly in, do the shows, and then fly back out.
Yeah, because she's been there for years as well.
Yeah, she was. I think she had like a tunnel from her hotel room to the thing, which I'm sure was there before, but she made sure it was like humidified to the 60% or whatever they reckon is good, because otherwise you get that Vegas throat thing.
Ah, the dry desert.
The dry.
So this it was written about the Apollo missions in the 60s, this song.
Great.
And so this is what it says on Wikipedia. It's about a sense of disappointment bordering on betrayal, that having dreamed of the moon, or indeed because it got there, humanity now seems confined to slowly boil the earth. That's what the pop song's about.
We're reading into this a bit too much. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's ridiculous.
So I was working on this for a bit about the Apollo missions.
Right.
How Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon, and it was that thing of like, imagine if that wasn't successful.
Yeah.
The whole world's watching. Neil walks out, head explodes in the helmet.
Oh my God.
Buzz doesn't see it. He's like looking around going, he walks out. Head explodes. I'd say as a humanity, we would not take any risks ever again.
You're right.
You know what? We've learned our lesson. Keep your feet firm and planted on the ground.
Imagine being Buzz after seeing that. I'm really not too sure. You got to go out there.
Because the instinct would be, if he falls, you're, shit, what's wrong? Did he slip? And then you'd go,
see his face splattered on the...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I wonder if Tamsin would have written a completely different song.
But Tamsin Archer, one great. One song.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't, you know, these one-hit wonders, you've had a hit. That is better than most people can do. You know, like they're almost shamed for having a one hit. I'm like, man, that's amazing. That's incredible.
Well, we're going from one hit to
a
plethora of hits. And this is Elton John's The Last Song. Now,
just when you thought you couldn't get slower.
The audacity of this first line, though.
Oh.
Yesterday.
Yep, that's you right. Oh, man. I was like, I heard it in the car yesterday, because I've not heard this song before, and I heard it and went, Is this cover?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep playing. We'll keep playing. Just... You came to lift me up, as light as
straw and brittle as a bird. Is this on the back of Wind Beneath My Wings or something? Today,
well, we'll go, go into the history of it after we finish, but we'll just let this listeners just one more soak up the power of Elton. Voice unheard tomorrow. Leave the windows open. As fear grows, please hold me in your arms. Won't you help me if you can, to shake this anger? Your gentle
hand. Man, it's the sparkling keys and the reverb that gets me with this stuff.
There you go. That's enough of that one. So
yesterday, fucking hell.
This song was originally titled "Song for 1992,"
right?
But they decided to change it so it didn't date the song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is a smart move.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's like also Silverchair's anthem for the year 2000. Oh, it's like, yeah, they still play that. Oh, they don't play gigs anymore, but they were playing that well into when they were touring. It's like, oh, yeah, it's kind of dated now.
I know, but then you got Prince's 99. Yeah. Like, I kind of go...
But he wrote
that
in the 80s.
Yeah. But that's thinking forward, yeah, right? I love that. But it's kind of like, I don't mind something that puts a stamp on something. I mean, the production values of this song says it all anyway.
Yeah.
You kind of know when it's from. It almost sounds more 80s than 90s.
It does. So it was written... Freddie Mercury had died the previous year.
Right.
And they wanted to write a song, he and his songwriting partner, right. Bernie Taupin, who writes... Taupin writes the lyrics. I thought it would be the other way around. But no, yeah. Elton writes the music.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Because I struggle with serious lyrics.
Yeah, okay.
So, but funny or more tongue-in-cheek kind of obvious lyrics are great.
Yeah.
Like if I'm doing more of old Tom Jones, Elvis type song, it's easy to write those lyrics. If I'm doing actually something serious, I find it hard to be that sentimental and whatever. So I get it.
Elvis had the same problem. Elvis, when he was doing his breakdown, when he's talking bits in... What's the song he does the talking bit in?
The first line, baby, you said you love me and...
Love Me Tender. Did he do a talking bit in Love Me Tender?
It's like that one.
Yeah,
it's,
and he could never get through it live. There's so many things of him getting the giggles.
Yeah, well, in the 69 one I heard the other day, he got through it all. I'm like, wow. But then the previous version, I've heard him do it and he's off his nut a bit.
Yeah.
And he can't... Yeah. Do it because he can't remember it.
Malcolm Gladwell has a whole podcast about that song.
Oh, and wow.
That kind of thinking. Go listen to that one. It's really good.
I do like the talking interludes, though. But
so Elton John, so they're not in the same room when they're doing this. They write in different areas. Elton will write the music.
Yep.
Bernie does the lyrics. Then they put them together, which...
Great. I do wonder, though, because, I mean, I feel like the melody is something separate from those two. So lyrics... Elton does the music, but then there's a melody that you got to put over the top of the music. So who does that? Whether it's Elton just puts it on piano and just goes, here's the melody I was thinking, and Torbs goes, here's...
Which is why I feel Elton John's songs do go well into musicals and stuff like that, because there's so many musicals where it's like the melody just loses it because they have to fit in some juxtaposition, some whatever, not juxtaposition, some storyline. They've got to get plot into it. Go, all right, we've got to rush through this so we get to the plot. So this was the money from this song went to the AIDS Foundation.
Great.
And so this is a quote that he said. He said, I was crying all the time as I wrote the music and it was very hard for me to sing it. And then Bernie goes on to explain, we didn't go for the obvious. I tried to do something lyrically that would thaw the intolerance of not understanding. That's why they use the idea of a father come to terms with his son's status in life and his sexuality. But unfortunately for the father, understanding too late. And so that's...
Didn't go for the obvious. We'll just use the start of someone else's song. No one will see that coming.
So they Gus Van Sant did the music video for it, but he was not the first choice.
That? Who's Gus? I've heard of
Gus
that.
Gus Van Sant.
Man.
He did... big time director. I think Good Will Hunting is of Gus
Van
Sant.
Of course.
Yeah. They asked Madonna to direct it first.
Huh.
She said, no, I'm all good. But called the last song, not his last song, which is Just As Well.
Mm.
But I do want Elton to do another song just because his actual last song that he's ever recorded is called Sausage Rolls for Everyone.
Jesus.
Do you want to hear of it?
Yeah,
This is the last actual song that Elton John's ever recorded and put out.
All right.
So if he doesn't do another one, this is it. This is the last one.
This is the swan song.
It was a Christmas build single. With Ed Sheeran and a guy called Lad Baby. Lad Baby.
Come and sing and dance to songs.
Now it's making sense.
With me.
All these songs are about sausage rolls.
Here we go. We are back. Trying to make history for charity. And may I introduce to you Ed Sheeran and Sir Elton John.
Wow.
No pressure. Let's have a party, it's Christmas Day. Your mum's cooking turkey, but been moaning since yesterday.
The presents are open and the bin bags are put away. Just until Boxing Day.
Now, here we go.
Let's dance, Merry Christmas. Get to the kitchen for sausage rolls. Get drop your toys and get along to rock and roll.
Oh, what would you rather? Would you rather listen to that song or the last song?
I would prefer to listen to that song.
It's good, isn't it?
And how's the auto-tune? Just crank it to the max and get Elton, because can he sing? Of course he can. Wow. Who was the girl in there? There was also someone else.
Someone else, but she's not listed in the credit. Yeah. But I think maybe she might be a part of Lads. Baby.
Yeah.
So they've got...
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
it's a long
funny.
Way to the top. Is another. They just got a long way to the sausage top to get roll. A sausage roll. But all the songs that they've released are about sausage rolls.
That's great. I love that. And that must have been a part of like the New Year's Eve countdown.
I don't know. Maybe it's a radio.
Who ends
thing,
up number one? Isn't that?
Yeah, it's the big Christmas chart.
Far out. Yeah. Well, that's a great song, Elton. I wonder if Torbs had a hand in that one.
All right. Moving on. Now this is. We talked about this guy two episodes ago with Ben Lomas. We both agreed. Achy Breaky Heart, absolute banger. This was the follow-up to Achy Breaky Heart. Ooh. This is Billy Ray Cyrus's Could Have Been Me. Very different.
I hear you just got married. Took him up long, hard and long.
Very brisk. Springsteen.
And you were all smiles at the wedding. And you cried when you kissed the queen. I got no invitation. I guess the mailman didn't bring it to me. But I see the whole thing in slow motion. Every night as I try to sleep. My buddy John said you look real pretty.
Good slow build, though.
Like tells a story.
Yeah.
Nice narrative.
He said the preacher asked for objections. And he thought about standing up. I told John he must have been crazy.
We'll get to the chorus.
Cause you were just about to say I do. He just gave me a wink and said all he could think was it could have been.
I like this.
And my dreams come in true, but those dreams move on if you wait too long.
That's a nice bit.
That is. Wow. The country music appreciation of Josh Earl.
It could have been me. Now, this is, it's the type of song that you. It's kind of like the emotional maturity you would see on Facebook at about 11:30 from guys in their 40s and 50s just who've been scrolling through Facebook. Seeing old girls I went to school with and just going, could have been me.
Could have been me. I don't mind this. I mean, in terms of it's a country song, so I just go, it's country. I'm not the biggest fan of country, so it's on that pile anyway. But I'm going to go, it builds. It's quite good. And I just think about country live is great.
Yep.
Country on recordings, I don't really like. But as a live song, that'd go off.
Yeah.
Could have been me. But the double, the harmony in the chorus is so Springsteen. Yep.
There's a little bit, a little run of keys in there that sounds Billy Joel-ish as well.
I heard that as well. Yeah, but you're like, the dun, 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 dun. Yeah. That's great.
Now, this is the type of song I've discovered on this podcast that you... It's worth going down the rabbit hole of YouTube comments to see what people have said about this song.
Beautiful.
And there's a lot of people going, I understand exactly what he's going through. A lot of sadness. But this was my favorite one. This is from a guy called Matt Murphy. And this he wrote, when I was in elementary school, my bus driver played this song over and over for the whole year. Good times.
Oh, that bus driver's crying the whole trip.
That bus driver's hating life. Those kids are lucky they got to school. Yeah. Just drive it off a bridge.
Maybe that's why he became... Maybe he was talking about an old high school or primary school crush.
Yeah.
And so he had to just keep living in the past, just driving the kids.
Yeah, but look, there's no way this song's on the album if he didn't have Achy Breaky Heart. It obviously was a twofer. Okay, you want Achy Breaky Heart, you're going to take the second single as well.
Yeah. It seems a weird second single.
Well, so people on YouTube are saying if he did this first... And Achy Breaky Heart second, he would have a different career. I think Billy Ray Cyrus has a pretty good career.
Oh, I think he does, yeah.
He's been working constantly.
Yeah.
Like, he...
Yeah. And
not acting as well, like, in, his daughter, Miley's got, like, huge fame. And, like, he's doing okay.
I agree. And country in itself just has a massive fan base.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, he's always going to be fine. But I did watch the Shania Twain doco last week.
Oh, is it good?
Really good. To, yeah, I mean, I didn't know much about it, so it was just nice to get to know it. But I think, and that's almost the same where, yeah, releasing something like this first, where it's not the banger, could be better. Because I think she did a bit of that where, maybe it was or wasn't on purpose, but the lesser song was first, and then the second one comes in and it just hits you in the face. And you're like, oh, yeah. And then you get into that first one.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're moving on. Now, this is a song by a band, Heaven 17. This song is from the 80s, but this is the Brothers in Rhythm remix that was released in 1993. Here we go. Heaven 17, Temptation.
Never been closer. I've tried to understand that certain feeling carved by another's hand. Oh, but it's too late to hesitate. We can't keep on living like this.
Moving.
There we go.
Wow. The thing that strikes me is just the weird kind of melodic shifts. It's very Duran Duran-ish.
Yes. Yes. Which we'll talk about
in
a minute. But so Heaven 17, Martin Ware and Ian Craig Marsh, who were previously in The Human League.
Right.
Glenn Gregory, who's on vocals, which...
So is that N vocals? Or?
But it's so... Like, look, not to discredit Glenn's voice... But if you,
I
reckon Martin and Ian probably have the similar voice,
right,
to someone like that. Like you don't need to bring him in. And I looked at him and I go, oh, is he a real good looking dude? Right. That's why they go, nah, bald dude.
Just sounded to me like that was just the track you lay down just as a demo.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when Carol Kenyon, who does the kind of chorus, you say, oh. She can sing.
She's singing.
Why don't you just get her to sing the whole bit?
But maybe it could be a bit too much.
Yeah.
Maybe you need that contrast.
So they got their name from A Clockwork Orange, the Anthony Burgess novel and also film. So Heaven 17 were a band playing on the radio apparently, and so they got their name. But this is Martin Ware who wrote the song. This is what he about the subject matter. He said, I woke up one morning and thought, I've got to write a song about sex. I've never written a song about sex. Mm. So the song is about the rising sexual tension. And he says, the chords keep going up like an MC Escher staircase. So they loop again. But I think all songs loop. You don't just play a chord once and then never go back to it.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know. That's
do they change key and loop? Is that what he means by going up?
Well, it didn't sound like it did. And he also, a never-ending chord structure and used the Lord's Prayer as the basis. So that's Lead Us Not Into Temptation. That's what that's from.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's
not about sex.
Well, I guess it's the temptation of sex and using the Lord's Prayer. It's who knows? Who knows?
I'm not a fan of the song.
It's also on the Trainspotting soundtrack as well,
right?
And I think it's just soaked into me from listening to that so much.
I'm sure. Here's what I reckon: like moving image and song is one of the most powerful things because there's a visual element to the like music alone is great. But when you have that visual, man, it just does something else. So if you've got it tied into a visual movie or something, I absolutely agree. I'm sure if I had that, I would love the song as well because it would bring back a real feeling of something.
But. Yeah. So we've got from the 80s, Heaven 17.
Uh-huh.
Then moving into another massive 80s band, Duran Duran, and this is their song. Ordinary World.
Coming from a rainy Thursday on the avenue.
I love it.
You like this one?
I love it.
Thought I heard you talking.
It reminds me of the German band.
Oh, yeah.
Winds of Change.
I turned on the lights, the TV, and the radio. Still,
also, how many movies this is.
I know, right. Yeah.
What has happened to it all? Crazy summer say. Where is the life that I recognize? But I won't cry for you.
I like that it finishes on that chord.
Yeah.
I just got reminded of the last visual thing I saw or heard this in. It was a doco about some con artist who said he was an MI6 or MI5 agent in the UK. And he duped this one girl for 10 years, like brutal. But I think it was something about someone was driving a car and this person would play this song on repeat for like a 6-hour car trip or something.
Wow.
Yeah, anyway. But I feel like it's at the end of a film.
Yeah.
You know, it's that real closing credits type song.
It sounds very cinematic. So this was, Duran Duran, huge in the 80s. They were going through a bit of a dry patch. Their last album before this, Liberty, was a massive flop. And they kind of bunkered down to say, what are we as a band?
Right.
Wrote a bunch of songs and Capitol Records just were like not really keen on it, thinking, we don't really know where you guys fit anymore.
Yeah.
And so what happened with this song, they had this song and they leaked it or very strategically just gave it to a Jacksonville, Florida radio station and go, here's a new one from Duran Duran, do what you want with it. They played it. It was a huge hit. Huge. Wow. The station was like, everyone's like, you got to play that, got to play that, got to play
that. Crazy.
This sparked such an interest that Capitol went, we've got to get the album out. So they moved it forward from when they were going to plan to do it in 93 to December 92. Went to number one, the album. This is the second most played Duran Duran song on Spotify.
Wow.
Like 241 million. The only one is Hungry Like the Wolf is bigger.
Jesus.
Which is like, yeah, and... So they then...
So he's saying the Bond theme the Bond doesn't come close.
Rio, that's the song. So went to one in Canada, one in Italy, 18 in Australia. This song was number 3 in the US. And what they would do for their B-sides, because they liked the album Liberty, the one that they put the singles from that, which were flops, as the B-sides.
Perfect.
Going, hey, if you like these, get the whole album. And amazing. They... got a whole new fan base.
Oh my God.
Off the back of it.
I love that stuff. You know, because it's about also just a reflection on labels and, and what they know and what they don't know and what they think they know. I like proving those people wrong, I guess, or people proving those people wrong, you know?
Yeah. So it's a self-titled album, but the fans call it the wedding album because on the cover is a... because they'd already had a self-titled album as well.
Oh, so, second self-titled. It also reminds me of the Bee Gees, You Win Again. It's got that same...
I don't think I know that one.
You win again, so little time, baby. Na, 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 na.
All right.
Anyway.
We are moving on to the final song on the album. I've kept my powder. I've liked all these songs. This is the only one that I'm like...
Really?
I could never listen to this song again and I'd be fine. So this is An Emotional Time by Hot House Flowers.
You know what? I think on a lazy Sunday morning in bed, turn this not too loud, just in the background. I feel like it's not a bad little tune.
Hey, if you sell your compilation as 100% hits and you don't want to have something on in the background that you can ignore.
It's down low.
I mean, they put it at the end. They put it at the end where you can go, we've got our money's worth. We can pack up the chairs while this song plays.
Absolutely.
Everyone can file out.
Yeah.
Physical.
I feel like it could have been a Sofia Coppola film too.
Yeah. All right.
It's a bit boring.
That's its biggest crime. It's boring. There's nothing like, I can't just pinpoint why it's bad. It's just boring. So yeah. Hot House Flowers, Irish band. I would not even attempt to say their names, like their individual names. They're all like completely like out of my comfort level to be actually say and think, oh yeah, I'm doing a good job. Kind of almost discovered by Bono.
Oh right.
He saw them, or they were performing on television.
Right.
And then offered to release their single "Love Don't Work This Way" on U2's label, and then Polygram saw it, signed them, and went great. Their album was the most successful debut album in history in Ireland. Number one slot within a week, number two in the UK album charts, first single Feet on the Ground, went to number one, and the song Don't Go was a huge hit in the UK because it was played in the interval between contestants of the 1988 Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so they were like, people were loving it, going, cool, what's this one? I like this one.
Finally a good song. So you're saying The Corrs didn't touch these guys as one of the best-selling albums?
I don't know, no. In 92, the Hot House Flowers joined up to form a little supergroup with Def Leppard.
Oh my goodness.
And they called themselves the Acoustic Hippies from Hell.
So catchy. not the greatest title, but...
So they recorded three songs. They did a cover of You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones. They did Little Wing by Jimi Hendrix. And then they did another song called From the Inside.
Right.
So I think that was an original song by the...
Okay, that's good.
The Acoustic Hippies.
They kind of went, we love what the Traveling Wilburys are doing.
Yes.
That's...
So this was the 1992 album song... Oh, what's it called? Songs from the... Whatever, I don't know. Who cares? I'm sure listeners will. But didn't get very good reviews, and this is what the Philadelphia Inquirer said about it.
A good read.
Celtic soul can be a mighty tepid cup of tea. That's not what you want.
No, tepid. Yep. Oh, to be described as tepid.
Because tepid is like, it's not even an insulting word. It's like, you can, like, if it's like, this is shit, you can kind of go, well, it's not, but tepid is such a word that you're like, there's no real coming back to.
No, there's not. It's like, yeah, there's not black or white. It's just that in the middle, but it's on the verge of gross. It's like, oh, yuck.
It's almost like, yeah, the worst thing you say about someone is, it's boring. That's what it is. It's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What a side B.
That's the end of volume 7.
Wowee.
Now.
Did you do side A previous episode?
I did. Yeah. Will Anderson looked at side A.
Uh-huh.
You're doing side B. Now, what we do at the end of every episode is we go through it and go... They call it 100% hits.
Uh-huh.
What percent would you give it?
Funny, because I thought about what percent, but I was going off the whole album. So side B, I think I literally... How many did I
have? We've got Free Your Mind. Hit or not hit?
Yep, I'll count that as a hit.
In the Morning, Boom Crash Opera.
No.
Are You Going to Go My Way?
Yes.
Absolutely. Sleeping Satellite.
This was a tough one, because I know it was a big hit, and I don't necessarily like it. So no.
No.
The no.
Last song no. Elton John. Could Have Been Me, Billy Ray.
No.
Temptation.
No.
Ordinary World.
Yes.
Emotional Time.
No.
So you've got 3 out of the 9.
Possibly 4 with Satellite.
33.3% hits.
Yeah, that's...
That's not... I think that's the worst one we've had.
I think if you're paying... And what was the side A?
Side A was pretty... I think we had about 70% hits.
Yeah, great. So that's 100% hits.
Yeah, that's how percentage works. Hey, Oliver, thanks so much for doing this.
Where
can people find you?
They can find me. I'm gigging around town, but also hop on to Spotify. I have the Oliver Clark music on there, 4 albums, couple of singles, and they're all tongue-in-cheek, but I love that music. It's that real Tom Jones, Elvis, Dean Martin era. So they're all fun tunes, but good music. Also did a side project, John Cox, that is also on Spotify. That's more blues, rock, soul. So that's more of a guitar-based thing and more serious. But I also love that as well. So Spotify, go there.
Go there. Hey, thanks everyone who's been downloading and leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that kind of stuff. Really helps out with the algorithm, helps me keep the lights on. Also, if you're in Melbourne, I'm doing a live episode of Don't You Know Who I Am at the Belfry on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy on the 14th of August, 3 p.m. Make sure you head over there. Go to joshua.com.au for tickets. Also, thanks everyone for being Patreon subscribers. You guys are the absolute best. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Awesome. Great stuff.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.